Is it not by a high superfluousness that we know our God? For to be equal to a need is natural, animal, mineral. But to fling rainbows over the rain and beauty over the moon and secret rainbows on the domes of deep sea shells and make the necessary embrace of breeding beautiful also is fire. Not even the weeds to multiply without blossom, nor the birds without music. There is the great humaneness at the heart of things, the extravagant kindness, the fountain humanity can understand and would flow likewise if power and desire were perchmates. From Walt Whitman. Why, who makes much of a miracle? As to me, I know nothing else but miracles. Whether I walk the streets of Manhattan or dart my eyes over the roofs of the houses toward the sky, or wade with naked feet along the beach just in the edge of the water, or stand under trees in the woods, or talk by day with anyone I love, or sleep in the bed at night with anyone I love, or sit at table at dinner with the rest, or look at strangers riding opposite me in the car, or watch the honeybees busy round the hive of a summer forenoon, or animals feeding in the fields, or birds, or the wonderfulness of insects in the air, or the wonderfulness of sundown, or stars shining so quiet and bright, or the exquisite, delicate, thin curve of the new moon in spring. These, with the rest, one and all, are to me miracles, the whole referring yet each distinct and in its place. To me, every hour of the light and the dark is a miracle. Every cubic inch of space is a miracle. Every square yard of the surface of the earth is spread with the same. Every foot of the interior swarms with the same. To me, the sea is a continual miracle. The fishes that swim, the rocks, the motion of the waves, the ships with people in them. What stranger miracles are there? A few years ago, the Zen Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a book titled The Miracle of Mindfulness, where he said that some people consider it a miracle to be able to walk on the water, or a miracle to walk through the thin air, when the real miracle is to walk on the earth with the blue sky above, with the living grass beneath our feet, to sense every moment. So here's a meditation that he taught to help us be mindful of those everyday miracles. Breathing in, I breathe in calm for body and mind. Breathing out, I smile. Breathing in, I am in this present moment. Breathing out, this is a wonderful moment. Breathing in, peace and calm. Breathing out, I smile. Breathing in, present moment, breathing out, wonderful moment. Namaste.
Namaste.
Life is made up of both tough and tender moments. There's grief, and darkness, and tragedy. There's beauty and light and love. There's disappointment and hope. There's sadness and celebration. And is there any better symbol of life's complexity and wholeness than an ordinary egg? There's nothing that's easier to break. Probably all of us have noticed that scattered blue fragments of robin's eggs in our backyards in the springtime. Eggs have to be easy to shatter, to break apart, because the shell can't be too thick, or the growing chick can't get out. And it also needs to be tough and strong and resilient to protect it from whatever threats might come along. Some years back, the headmaster of a school in England decided to find out just how much a rough handling an ordinary egg could stand up to. So he asked the local fire department to come by the school and take a dozen raw eggs and drop them onto the school green from the top of a 70-foot ladder. 7 out of 10 survived the fall. Then the officer from the Royal Air Force got interested. He arranged for a helicopter to drop more eggs from a height of 150 feet onto the school green. Out of 18 that made the plunge, only 3 broke from the fall. Then the local newspaper got involved. They hired a Piper Aztec to dive bomb an airfield with 5 dozen eggs traveling 150 miles an hour. Over half of them survived the strafing. And it's encouraging, at least to me, who's always on the lookout for small miracles, to know that you're average grade A egg can survive an aerial bombardment. Tells me that life is delicate, it's fragile, it's perishable, but it's also made of pretty durable stuff. And then along with eggs, there are also nests, which you can find almost anywhere there are trees, or even where there aren't any trees. One house wren was noticed for building her nest inside the pocket of an old scarecrow. And another made her nest inside the hubcap of a car that actually got driven, and the nest survived, and the eggs still hatched. A black-chinned hummingbird who lived in an orange grove in California built her tiny little 1-inch high cup shaped nest right on top of an orange. As Barbara Dunning explains in her book, Secrets of Nests, the whole idea of nesting is pretty astonishing when you think about it. We have this funny little animal, she reflects, walking or hopping along on 2 feet with its hands essentially tied behind its back, the survival of the species depending on how well it can protect this ridiculous, round, roly, fragile thing containing its future offspring. As part of her research, the author tried caring for an egg on her kitchen floor, pushing it around with her nose. You might try this at home. I heard foxes in the living room, snakes in the broom closet, raccoons sneaking around in the cabinets behind the cereal boxes, she remembered. Given the nature of the threats and the flimsiness of the defenses, it's a wonder that any birds survive at all, but the marvel is that the robins and the chickadees and the blue jays, they all come back every spring to start new families and build new homes. And consider those nestlings and fledglings. How amazing it is that these tiny, completely naked, helpless birds are ready in the space of 2 short weeks to spread their wings and fly. Between the time he or she peeps out of the shell and then puts on his flight feathers, a baby robin has to be fed the equivalent of 14 feet of earthworms every single day. And this is the reason that mom and dad look so busy. They are in the transformation business, gathering the 3 pounds of slippery, slimy but satisfying night crawlers that are mysteriously converted into one new robin redbreast ready to take flight. Mm-hmm. There is a change that happens, something that wriggles and burrows down in the dark becomes a chorister in the treetops singing to the sunlight, and how that happens is fantastic. Life is incredible. Earth is phenomenal. Black earth turned to yellow crocus, a poet says, is undiluted. Hocus pocus. And how all that magic fits together can be quite fascinating, especially to a child. Jane Goodall remembers visiting her grandmother's farm when she was quite young. When she was just 4 years old, she would go there in the summer times, and it was her daily chore to go out in the mornings and gather the eggs from the hen house. As the days passed, she recalled, I became more and more puzzled. Where on a chick was there an opening? Large enough for an egg to come out. Apparently, nobody had talked to her about the birds and the beasts, so the little girl decided to investigate. I followed a hen into one of the little wooden hen houses, but of course, as I crawled in after her, she gave horrified squawks and hurriedly left, and my young brain must have worked it out that I would have to be there first. So I crawled into another hen house and waited, hoping that a hen would come in to lay. And there I remained, crouched in silence in one corner, concealed in the straw, waiting. At last a hen came in, scratched about in the straw, settled herself on her makeshift nest right in front of me. She says, I must have kept very still, or she would have been startled or disturbed, but presently the hen half stood up, and I saw a round white object gradually protruding from the feathers between her legs, and suddenly, with a plop, the egg landed in the straw. She was so excited, Jane had to run inside and tell her mother what had happened, the mystery of how an egg gets laid, but she'd been gone for 4 hours. She disappeared. Nobody knew where Jane had gone. Her mother had called the police. But when she appeared again, her mom wasn't angry. Didn't scold. She could see how excited she was. Her bright, shining eyes. And so they sat down together to listen to this story of how life happens. Spring is the season for miracle stories. Christians tell how Jesus rose from the grave. Jews relate the legend of how their ancestors passed through the Red Sea, escaping to their promised land. Believers who are born again speak of this renewal in terms of conversion, or in Greek, metanoia, and this is the term that Paul uses in the New Testament in his letter to the Romans when he tells them, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your minds. Do not be a conformist, don't buy into conventional definitions of happiness or success or gender roles or race or caste. Be a nonconformist. And he follows that advice right up with a description of what a deep inner metanoia might look like. He says, love one another. Practice hospitality. Resist evil. Hold fast to that which is good. Feed the hungry. Give to the poor. Remember that we're like the separate fingers on one hand. We're like members of one great body. And what he's talking about here is human solidarity. About planetary consciousness, about maintaining our individuality, but going beyond that to see that we're part of an ecosystem, that we participate in an interdependent universe. And when we've been transformed, when we've been converted at that deep, deep level, then we start to see miracles everywhere. Then we see it in the peepers, in the wetlands, in the sap, in the maples, the worms that are turning into songbirds, the caterpillars transforming into butterflies, the tadpoles into bullfrogs. These are all natural conversion experiences. They're everyday miracles of a mother's love and a little girl's curiosity, and probably there are prodigies in your own backyard. My backyard in New England, for instance, was where our chickens used to live. Dora and I like to say that we had poultry before poultry was cool. We didn't eat our birds. We had rescued them actually from the farm store, where they were living in a big metal water trough, and these scrawny little chicks were being pecked on by the larger fowls. So I built a coop out of recycled wood, and at least before I became a vegan, that's where we got our eggs. You know, growing up, I'd always assumed that eggs came from the grocery store, and that was obviously what the children in my congregation believed also on the Easter Sunday morning when I decided to bring one of my hens to church. Believe me, it's humiliating for a renowned preacher like myself to be upstaged by a chicken. We had an old unused parakeet cage in the garage, so I put the chicken in the parakeet cage and set it there on the chancel and invited the kids to come up and gather around, and I explained to them that eggs did not only come from bunnies. See, there are some, Unitarian Universalists, we like to question everything, but there are some myths we have to participate in, right? Eggs don't only come from bunnies, I told them. They also came from flocks like mine, and although our chickens were not exactly pets, I told them that our birds did indeed have names, Fred and Gobbledygook, and Faith and Hope and Charity. You see, when she wasn't molting, Hope was the thing with feathers. I've seldom seen any kids more excited or wide-eyed. I'm sure few of them had ever seen a real live chicken before. None of them, I'm sure, knew that in the Gospels, in Luke and Matthew, God's love is likened to that of a mother hen protecting her chicks, a beautiful image of the divine feminine. But I have no doubt that those children that morning were rejoicing in the miracle and mystery of life as I came to experience it almost every day. That was my first item of business every morning. I'd go out to the laying box, and by golly, I always got a thrill each time I saw that they'd done it again. I would trade them cracked corn and water, and they would give me omelets. I couldn't lay an egg in a million years. All I could do was say, thank you, thank you. Yummy. It's a miracle. I shared a meditation from Thich Nhat Hanh. Let me leave you with another bit of Dharma. The thought manifests as the word. The word manifests as the deed. The deed develops into habit, and habit hardens into character. So watch the thought and its ways with care, and let it spring from love, born out of respect for all beings.